5, E5 of Vanacek. This is the part 4, the finale of the Boof Conundrum. This is the most comprehensive search for a new and improved Boof, probably in the history of podcasting, in the history of Teen Wolf. I've heard lots of people talk about it. I've heard lots of podcasters mention Boof. Boof gets a lot of hate. You know, I don't think I'm alone in thinking that she could have been improved, but no one has ever rolled up their sleeves, started with about 400 actresses, nailed it, you know, narrowed it down to 100 actresses, and then discussed them all, only to identify the definitive, the best version of Boof that we could possibly have, who would have been best in the role. So I'm going to go through some more categories, and then we're going to go into the finalist round. I mean, this is torn. This is bracket style, March Madness style, and I've done it. I'm looking at a sheet of paper where I have done it. I have identified the actress that should play Boof. So hopefully you have found this as interesting as I have. But if not, I hope you're enjoying it somewhat. Let's recap what we've done so far. So our categories, the first one's Blast from the Past with Melissa Gilbert making her way to the finalist round. Daphne Zuniga, she won the similar vibe, but better. The Ethan Wayne for someone who comes from a Hollywood family went to Tracy Nelson. The Teen Wolf So White went to Holly Robinson-Pete. Our No Wolf, No Part actress ended up being Frances McDormand as Margie Gunderson. The Show Her the Money Award for an actress they would have had to definitely step up and pay, that went to Phoebe Cates. The Buy Low, Sell High, an actress who was just about to explode before Teen Wolf, that went to a three-way tie. Heather Langenkamp, Elizabeth Shue, and Jennifer Grey. The Scarier Than the Wolf, actresses who were far more frightening than Michael J. Fox in a werewolf costume, that went to no winners. There were no winners in that category. The Keep It in the Family Award, that was for people who are actually in Michael J. Fox's personal circle, his sphere, that went to his wife, Tracy Pollan. The This Changes Everything Award for an actress who would have completely changed the movie had she been Boof went to Marley Matlin. I was proud of that pick. That's actually a good pick. And the So No One Told You Award for someone who's associated with the show Friends, that went to Courtney Cox. And today we're going to go through four categories before going into the finalist bracket. So without further ado, folks, without further ado, let's go to our first category that we're going to talk about today. And that is... And the Oscar goes to this next list of Boof nominees. They are also Oscar winners. Now, granted, I've already identified a few Oscar winners already, but bear with me. It's hard wrangling all these ladies into unique categories. So let's dive in and look at some Oscar winners and see if Boof would have fit into their pre-Oscar resumes, right? So we're going to start off with Julianne Moore. Born in 1960, you know her from Boogie Nights and Still Alice. My introduction to Julianne Moore, though, was in Robert Altman's 1993 classic Shortcuts. Wow. I've been a fan ever since. And if you know, you know. Go back and watch Shortcuts. Great movie. I love Robert Altman. But Julianne Moore, in particular, had one very interesting scene in that I remember as a young man watching, like, holy shit, I don't think I've ever seen a scene like this before. So I've loved her ever since. Now, to me, Julianne Moore is ageless and will always be Amber Waves from Boogie Nights. I make it a point to watch Boogie Nights, at least once a year. It's a top 10 movie for me. Interestingly, Boogie Nights was Julianne's second project with Burt Reynolds, right? Because in 1990, she appeared in an episode of his short-lived TV series, B.L. Stryker. B.L. Stryker only lasted 12 episodes. It was about a private eye living on a houseboat. I often imagine Julianne as a young actress working on this show, and I wish I could travel back in time and just whisper in her ear, "Don't worry, things will get better. You'll win an Oscar one day." And then I imagine she would like be brought to tears. Then I would whisper to her, "And you're going to work with this asshole again in a movie for which you will both receive Oscar nominations." And while drying her tears, she would quietly ask, "Both of us? Seriously? That guy too?" But that happened. Her and Burt Reynolds both got Oscar nominations for Boogie Nights, which I'm sure she never would have guessed when she was working with him in B.L. Stryker. Julianne is a 5-time Oscar nominee. Let's go through those. 1998, she received Best Actress in a Supporting Role nomination for Boogie Nights. In 2000, she received a Best Actress in a Leading Role nomination for The End of the Affair. 2003, she received a Best Actress in a Supporting Role nomination for The Hours. Also in 2003, Best Actress in a Leading Role for Far From Heaven. And of course, in 2015, she was nominated for Best Actress in a Leading Role for Still Alice. Her lone win was that one in 2015 for her role in Still Alice. It was It was a real fun movie about a woman diagnosed with early Alzheimer's disease. A real hoot. I check it out. I recommend you check it out if you want to laugh, but it's a pretty intense movie, but she was great in it. Now, Julianne didn't start working in film until 1984 when she appeared in 8 episodes of the soap opera The Edge of Night's final season, right? I have to imagine that a call from the Teen Wolf casting department would have been very well received by someone whose sole credit was on a dying soap opera. So let's say she auditions. I'm guessing she'd do well since she has proven ability, right? And look at her. I mean, it's very intriguing. She's pretty, while not being classically beautiful, and her redhead just might be perfect for the overlooked best friend. She does tend to overact sometimes. If you don't believe me, go see 1999's Magnolia. I love that movie. Also directed by P.T. Anderson, who directed her in Boogie Nights. But Lord almighty, she overacts her way through that movie. But ultimately, though, I think she'd make a great boof, and her future Oscar nominations would basically lift the Teen Wolf legacy to new heights. So a little Burt Reynolds side note, since we talked about him. This prick would have won that Oscar, by the way, for Best Actor in a Supporting Role for Boogie Nights had he not spent the entire Oscar season shitting on the movie. Like, all he wanted to do was distance himself, hated the movie, shit on the movie. I don't know. I just hope P.T. Anderson kicked him in the balls. Another little side note about Burt Reynolds. He likely would have been nominated for an Oscar for his performance in 1972's Deliverance had he not followed that film up with his infamous, now infamous, Playgirl pictorial, which caused the Academy and basically the rest of America to once again not take him seriously as an actor. So I hope director John Borman kicked him in the balls for that. So Burt Reynolds keeps kicking or shooting himself in the foot, rather. So that is Julianne Moore. Now, our next actress in the Oscar Goes To category is Holly Hunter. Ooh, I like Holly Hunter. Born in 1958, you know her from Raising Arizona, Broadcast News, The Piano. Thinking about Holly Hunter always transports me back to 1993. So it's 93. I'm at the Riverdale Twin with my high school girlfriend watching The Piano and wondering to myself, what the hell is going on in this movie? Because all I remember is mute people, an island, a piano, Harvey Keitel, schlong. What the fuck? I mean, clearly there was more to this film than I remember because it earned, Holly a Best Actress in a Leading Role Oscar. Hell, even, 11-year-old Anna Paquin, she won an Oscar for Best Actress in a Supporting Role. It also won for Best Original Screenplay. So in hindsight, maybe I was making out with my girlfriend too damn much, not paying attention to the movie because all I have is vivid memories of Keitel Schlong. So also named my book, Vivid Memories of Keitel Schlong. By Fanacek. So let's move on. Holly Hunter is a tiny little southern force of nature. Her Oscar nominations include 1988 Best Actress in a Leading Role nomination for Broadcast News. God, that's a good movie. 1994 Best Actress in a Supporting Role for The Firm. I forgot she was in that with Gary Busey. 1994, she got a Best Actress, also same year, Best Actress in a Leading Role for The Piano. So two Oscar nominations in the same year, just like Julianne Moore. And then in 2003, she was nominated for Best Actress in a Supporting Role for 13. Now, a little warning. If you are raising young daughters, do not watch 13. It's fucking terrifying. I have two daughters, and my oldest just turned, she just turned 13. So that's awful. So if you're raising teenage girls, stay away from that one, man. That is a horrifying movie. Now, back to Holly. Like many successful actors, Holly is versatile. That said, I'm of the opinion that all of her characters share one undeniable quality. That's toughness. She's scrappy, right? Holly Hunter and the character she portrays will not be beaten, right? They will not be defeated. They will not be denied. She will land on her feet. Sadly, this isn't a quality that would work for Boof. Holly Hunter's Boof would never allow the shittiest player on the shittiest basketball team to ignore her. So nope. Holly is great, but she is not Boof, alas. Next actress in the category, Helen Hunt. Helen Hunt, 1963, she was when she was born. You know her from Mad About You, Twister, As Good As It Gets. Ready for a controversial opinion? Here it is. I'm not big on Helen Hunt. I'm not a fan. I simply don't get her. I thought she came off as cold in Mad About You. She didn't seem very loving. Also, although I love As Good As It Gets, I mean, that's probably a top 20 for me. I don't care for her in it. Again, cold. I don't know. And Twister was just a stupid CGI piece of shit. So who cares what actors are in it, really? So the only memorable thing about that movie is the cow. Anyway, I feel better now. I've ranted a little bit. But in the meantime, let's discuss Helen's history with the Academy Awards because she has one. She is a 2-time nominee. She was nominated in 1998 for Best Actress in a Leading Role for As Good As It Gets. Also nominated in 2013 for Best Actress in a Supporting Role for The Sessions. She won for As Good As It Gets, which is totally worth watching because it is a fantastic movie with a fantastic cast. She did not win for The Sessions, which if you haven't seen it, all I'll say is this. Helen Hunt gets all kinds of naked. Like, holy crap, it's distracting. It's a distracting film. It's a good movie. Interesting. But yeah, if you haven't seen The Sessions, go check out The Sessions. And I'm assuming complaints are coming in now via Facebook for me for shitting on Holly Hunter and talking about her nudity in The Sessions, but it is what it is. Now that you're sufficiently annoyed with me, though, let's see if Helen makes a good boof. Spoiler alert, she doesn't. She lacks, like, a certain boofy vibe. Boof is supposed to care deeply for Scott, and again, Helen Hunt's a cold fish, man. I'm sure there are roles out there perfect for Helen Hunt. There obviously are, but Boof is not one of them. So I got to keep searching. Next actress and final actress, I believe, in this category is Ms. Gina Davis. She was born in 1956. You know her from Thelma and Louise, A League of Their Own. I'm currently trying to get my 13-year-old daughter that I mentioned before, trying to get her to watch A League of Their Own. I think she'd love it. Great movie. Now, I love Gina Davis, but this is not going to happen, right? She's too tall, too bold, too in charge. Gina Davis is not a supporting character. She's a leader. Like, baby, no one puts Gina in a corner. Here's some shining examples, right, of Gina's leadership, her drive for overall awesomeness. These are facts. Gina Davis launched the Gina Davis Institute on Gender and Media in 2004, which works collaboratively with the entertainment industry to increase the presence of female characters in media aimed at children and to reduce inequality in Hollywood and the stereotyping of females by the male-dominated industry. That's fact number one. Fact number two, she took up archery in 1997. By 1999, 2 years later, Davis was one of 300 women who vied for a semifinals berth on the U.S. Olympic team. And she placed 24th, 2 years into the sport. And she's like basically the 24th best woman in America. That's insane. Also, another fact, she's a member of Mensa. So she's technically a genius. How about that? So holy shit, there's no way a fucking Mensa member is going to appear in Teen Wolf. No offense to the cast of Teen Wolf. So that's a wrap on Gina Davis's boof. But since this is an Oscar category, here you go. She is a two-time nominee, 1989 nominated for Best Actress in a Supporting Role for The Accidental Tourist. In 1992, she was nominated for Best Actress in a Leading Role for Thelma and Louise. She won for The Accidental Tourist. And then a little personal side note, I have this weird memory. So I remember an adult friend of the family took me to the theater to see Thelma and Louise. So it was probably like, what, 1990, 91 when that came out? Afterwards, I specifically remember him describing Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon as homely. Homely. Now, this sticks out to me for two reasons. First, I never heard the phrase homely before. So I don't know. I took a liking to it. But also, I remember thinking like, really? Because I thought they were pretty hot. So anyway, that's an interesting personal side note. But the winner of the Oscar goes to category is Ms. Julianne Moore. So congratulations, Julianne. We will see you later on today in this podcast in the finalist tournament. Our next category, this was a fun one. And you cannot talk about recasting an 80s movie without talking about this group of actors. This is the St. Elmo's Pretty Pink Breakfast Club category. If you don't get these references, then please shut off the podcast and go away. The rest of you, please enjoy this group of Brat Packers who may just fit the bill as our new boof. Now, this was a tough category because there are no definitive lists of who is and who isn't considered a Brat Packer. For example, some folks claim that Robert Downey Jr. is. Some say he isn't. I'm in that latter camp. I don't think he is. Similarly, though, some lists claim that Jamie Gertz is a Brat Packer. Others ignore her completely. So let's loosen up and just say this is both a Brat Pack and Brat Pack adjacent category. If you take issue with any of my selections, do me a favor, fuck off, because if you mess with the bull, you get the horns. That's a Breakfast Club reference, by the way. Okay, first one up, Mare Winningham, born in 1959. You know her from St. Elmo's Fire. She was also in Georgia. I always considered Mare Winningham the serious Brat Packer. She always seemed older and wasn't as like traditionally pretty as the others. She's also one of the few to ever get an Oscar nomination for 1995's Georgia with Jennifer Jason Leigh. The other is Robert Downey Jr., but again, I don't consider him authentic Brat Pack. So those are the two Oscar nominees. Now, Mare's contribution to the Brat Pack contingent is her portrayal of Wendy in 1985's St. Elmo's Fire. Now, I love this movie, and I love how these young, like recent college grads take themselves so seriously. Wendy is probably the most authentic character in the film. She's a homely, hey, it's a callback. She's a homely girl, a rich girl, whose parents don't truly see her. Right? Rather, they want her to marry some like nebbish and go into the family business. Wendy would rather make sweet love to Rob Lowe's over-the-top man-child character. In the end, she tells everyone to fuck off, and she goes off to live on her own terms, enjoying the best PB&J sandwiches that she's ever tasted. If you don't know that reference, go see the movie. Now, not to make this too much about St. Elmo's Fire, but geez, like every character is a cliche in this movie. Andrew McCarthy is the jaded writer. Judd Nelson is the career-driven, like uber Republican. Demi Moore is the female fuck-up. Emilia Estevez is a lovesick wannabe lawyer, later wannabe doctor. Ally Sheedy is a, Ally Sheedy is kind of forgettable in this one, I guess. But she plays Judd Nelson's longtime girlfriend. And then there's Rob Lowe as the other fuck-up. He's the male fuck-up. His variety of fuck-up is the type that still visits the frat house, even though he has long graduated college. He longs like the glory days. But go back and watch this movie right now. Just for Rob Lowe's sweaty saxophone solo, it's worth the price of admission. It's right up there with the Top Gun volleyball scene, if you're into that kind of thing. Anyway, love that scene. Him playing saxophone. It's fucking crazy. Okay, back to Mayor Winningham. Does she make a good boof? This is a tough one. There are pros and cons. I mean, one factor is Mare's favor is that she's well-versed in playing a young woman overlooked by her handsome crush. I mean, that's exactly what she's doing at St. Elmo's Fire. Another is her resume. I mean, by 1984, Mare is a veteran of TV movies and episodic guest spots. Her big break wouldn't happen until 1985 St. Elmo's Fire. The question, though, is whether or not Mare would have been interested in the role. She has proven over her nearly 50-year career to often take the road less traveled, so I'm not sure she would have jumped at the chance to work in a teenage werewolf comedy. She's tough to read. Check out her 1984 credits, right? One of them is the TV movie Helen Keller, The Miracle Continues, in which she portrays Helen Keller as a college student. Now, that's juxtaposed with her other 1984 credit, the TV movie Single Bars, Single Women. It's about shallow young people who gather at singles bars looking for action. This gem also starred, interestingly, Tony Danza and Paul Michael Glazer. So who knows what the hell Mayor Winningham would say yes or no to, because those two could be further apart. What is mostly working against Mayor Winningham, though, as Boof, is what I said at the beginning. She's so serious. Like, I've never seen her doing anything remotely fun on screen. And I like Mayor Winningham, but I'm saying no to her as Boof. A little Mayor Winningham side note, though. Mayor appeared in a great 1986 Twilight Zone episode called Button Button. It's about a couple who are, they're struggling financially. One day a stranger visits them in their apartment and offers them a box with a button on it. If they press the button, a stranger will die and they will receive $200,000. So they spend like days struggling over the decision until they ultimately decide to press the button. The stranger then returns to retrieve the box and he assures them that the next recipient of the box will be a stranger. You know, suggesting that maybe they'll be the next ones to die. My strongest memory of the episode is how intense Mayor Winningham was. I mean, it was riveting. Go check it out. They later turned that episode, by the way, into a shitty 2009 movie with Cameron Diaz called The Box. But originally it was a Twilight Zone episode and it was fucking great. Our next category in the St. Elmo's Pretty Pink Breakfast Club is Demi Moore. That's right. Demi Moore is a legend. She was born in 1962. You know her from St. Elmo's Fire, Ghost, A Few Good Men. She looks as good in her 60s as she did in her 20s, quite frankly. She arrived on the scene in the 1981 forgettable movie Choices. It's about a deaf guy who plays football. Researching that movie made me laugh because when you look at all the original posters in the VHS boxes, Demi Moore's name and face are like nowhere to be seen, right? She clearly has a small role. But in all of the re-release material, she's the only one featured. I mean, if you didn't know any better, you'd think she was the deaf dude fucking playing football. So I love when movies do that. Now, her career interestingly took off 3 years later in 1984 with the soap opera General Hospital and the movie Blame It on Rio. Blame It on Rio is kind of fucked up. It's about these two middle-aged guys, they're best friends. They go to Rio with each of their daughters, right? So they each bring their daughter to Rio together. While there, one of the men starts banging his friend's daughter. The other guy, knowing that his daughter is now dating a mystery older man, enlists the first guy to help him find who this mystery guy is. It's like a 90-minute fucking Three's Company episode if Three's Company were fucked up. I don't know. I mean, it's not funny. I don't know. I just, the idea of me going on a vacation with my best friend, he starts banging my daughter. Like, that would fucking drive me crazy. Anyway, moving on. 1984 Demi Moore was a lot like 2024 Demi Moore. Sexy, husky voiced, a little bit dangerous. She has virtually no boof qualities. I mean, at best, you could put Demi in a ponytail, glasses, and overalls, I guess, and she would be, oh shit, she'd still be sexy, husky voice, a little bit dangerous. So Demi would be better served playing the girl that steals Mick away from Pamela and then bangs his dad in Rio. That's who Demi Moore is. So she is not a boof. We are moving on. Next up in the list is Jamie Gertz. Jamie Gertz, 1965. You know her from The Lost Boys, Less Than Zero, Twister. By the way, go back and watch Less Than Zero. Gotta love that fucking movie. All right. Woohoo. This is our first adjacent candidate. Remember I told you this would be Brat Pack or Brat Pack adjacent? Well, she's our first adjacent. Because look, Jamie was one of the leads in Less Than Zero with Andrew McCarthy and Robert Downey Jr. And she also had a small role in 16 Candles with Molly Ringwald. So that's close enough for me. So I don't want to hear any bullshit. Jamie Gertz only had like a brief stint as an A-lister. Very, very brief stint as an A-lister. She peaked in 87 with The Lost Boys in Less Than Zero. And by 1996, her appearance in Twister was basically she was a has-been, right? But none of that matters because my girl Jamie, this is true, she's a billionaire. Straight up, she's a billionaire. So in 1989, she married billionaire business executive Tony Ressler. Together, they are part owners of the Milwaukee Brewers and Atlanta Hawks. So I guess that's why she turned down Lost Boys 2, because she has billions. Now, Jamie had a really cool career in the 80s. She began working in movies in 81. Her second film credit is Endless Love, one of the many softcore porno films that fucking Brooke Shields' mother forced Brooke Shields to do, which I talked about in my last episode. It's about a 15-year-old girl in an erotic romantic relationship. So seriously, why is Terry Shields not being locked up? I don't understand this mother, but I digress. Jamie was part of the cast of Square Pegs with Sarah Jessica Parker and then soon appeared in episodes of Different Strokes, The Facts of Life, and drumroll, Family Ties. Now get this, in her Family Ties episode, she played one of two dates Alex Keaton had lined up for prom. The other was Daphne Zuniga. So two potential boofs as two potential love interests in one magical episode of MJF. Again, she exploded in 87 and has continued to work pretty steadily until now, although I'm not sure why, because shit, she doesn't have to, she's a billionaire. So is she a good boof? No. No. Is she a decent boof? Maybe. I mean, here's the issue. She often played the it girl. She was almost always the cool object of boys' desires, right? I mean, shit, in Less Than Zero, she played a model. In some of her 80s TV appearances, she played like, I'm taking this from IMDb, Dream Girl, Head of the Sorority. I mean, Jamie's in a tough spot. She's too beautiful for Boof, too kind for Pamela, and now she's too rich to even worry about it. So good for her. So she's not a Boof, but she ain't worried about that. Next up in the Brat Pack category, Andy McDowell. I know a lot of people don't consider her a Brat Packer, but Annie McDowell, born in 1958, she was in St. Elmo's Fire, so huh? Groundhog Day, Four Weddings and a Funeral. Annie McDowell, admittedly, is even less adjacent than Jamie Gertz, but she was in St. Elmo's Fire as the object of Emilio Estevez's affection, and although this is a stretch, she was also in Sex, Lies, and Videotape with James Spader, which is like the best Brat Pack villain of all time. So she makes the cut according to me, according to Fanacek, and it's my podcast. Now, on the surface, Andy isn't a great fit for the role of Boof. I mean, hell, she spent the 80s modeling for Vogue magazine, right? However, despite being tall, thin, and beautiful, right, an obvious model, it's her intellect that she seems to lead with. Meaning, I've never thought of her as model actress. My perception of her was always smart, bookish, doesn't suffer fools slash actress. If we take those smarts and combine them with her southern charm and soft-spoken demeanor, maybe we have a Boof. Or maybe we just have the same character she played in Groundhog Day. Who knows? Because that's what that character was. Ultimately, I think she could pull off the role. The problem is that MJF is 5'5", so it's just not going to happen. So sorry, Andy. Here's an opportunity, though, to make it about me. In 2008, I auditioned to play Andy's son in a film called The Fifth Quarter. Now, I never got an official no to that audition, but the movie came out the following year, and I'm not in it. So I'm guessing it didn't go my way. But that was interesting. I would have played her son, also Aidan Quinn's son. So that would have been neat. Didn't get it. Another little side note. I wasn't kidding about Andy being too tall for Michael J. Fox. I've told this story before, and you probably know it. Actress Melora Hardin was originally cast in the role of Jennifer in Back to the Future, opposite Eric Stoltz as Marty McFly. Now, when Eric was later replaced by Michael J. Fox, poor Melora Hardin was deemed too tall and replaced by Claudia Wells. So Melora's career stalled, and it wouldn't take off again until she landed The Office in 2005. That's a tough break, man, because as you probably know, she was Jan Levinson in The Office. Man, that's 20 years. It's 20 years that her career got stalled, but it worked out for her in the end. So let's move on. Next actor in the category, Ally Sheedy. She's a quintessential, man. She's an OG. She's an OG Brat Packer. Born in 1962. You know her from War Games, The Breakfast Club, St. Elmo's Fire. She's finally, right, a true blue Brat Packer. Ally Sheedy was one of the stars of the quintessential Brat Pack film, The Breakfast Club. Her character, Allison, was the goth misfit who I think sadly allows herself to get made over at the end just so Emilio Estevez's jock character would accept her. I don't like that. I mean, what the fuck are we teaching our girls? She should have stayed true to herself and said, look, take me as I am, bitches. But alas, I didn't write it. John Hughes did. And quite frankly, a lot of his shit did not age well, i.e. The geek having sex with a drunk girl in 16 Candles. Yeah, that's called rape now. Also, not to mention Long Duck Dong. Like, that's just one big Chinese joke or Asian joke. I don't know. I have nothing against John Hughes, but that shit doesn't hold up. Anyway, Ally starred in St. Elmo's Fire as Judd Nelson's girlfriend. If she'd only starred in Pretty in Pink, she would have hit that Brat Pack trifecta, man, because she did two of the three big ones, but didn't happen. So Ally Sheedy just might be perfect for Boof. Honestly, she had an incredible 1983 appearing opposite Matthew Broderick in War Games and Sean Penn in Bad Boys. By the way, go back and watch Bad Boys. That movie's so fucking good. Oh, man, Sean Penn having to go to a juvenile detention center. Oh, man, so good. Anyway, it's a really tough rape scene in there where Ally Sheedy, oof, it's rough. Great movie, though. So, but again, she worked again with Matthew Broderick in War Games, Sean Penn in Bad Boys. These were both big movies in which she was like in supportive yet really important parts. And I see no reason why the Teen Wolf Casting Association wouldn't just bang down Ally's door to offer her the role of Boof. Ally is like, she's a pretty girl next door type and is like superb at portraying strong, forthright women. Boof could have used a little forthrightness. So plus, as Ally became an OG Brat Packer, she might have dragged Teen Wolf into the whole Brat Pack conversation, right? Teen Wolf would have been Brat Pack adjacent. And really, there's no greater honor than that, is there, than being Brat Pack adjacent. So yeah, Ally Sheedy works well for Boof. So the winner of the St. Elmo's Pretty Pink Breakfast Club is Ally Sheedy. Well done, Ally. We're going to see you later today in the finalist tournament. Our next category is, they're brunettes. Because look, I'm running out of steam here. After about 80 actresses so far, it's hard to continue to group them into clever little groups. These ladies all have brown hair. That's all I'm capable of at the moment. Deal with it and be grateful I'm even doing this for you. So our first brunette is Sherilyn Fenn, born in 1965. You know her from Twin Peaks, Boxing Helena. We will be talking about Boxing Helena later. Johnny Depp has a small role in 1986's Platoon as the translator. I think his name was Private Lerner. Now, if you go back and you watch his scenes, you'll notice that his helmet has two nods to his then fiance, Sherilyn Fenn. One is the name Sherilyn, it's written across his helmet. The other is a little heart with the initials SF. So yes, Sherilyn Fenn is one of the many women to whom Johnny Depp has popped the questions. Others, if you're interested, include makeup artist Lorianne Ellison, actress and fellow Boof candidate Jennifer Grey, actress Winona Ryder, actress Juliette Lewis, and model Kate Moss. He married none of them. Interestingly, he never proposed to the mother of his two children, Vanessa Paradis, who he's with for nearly 20 years, but he did decide to go all the way with Amber Heard. Well done, shithead. Anyway, that's my little rant about Johnny Depp. But this isn't about Captain Jack Sparrow. This is about Sherilyn Fenn, whose work I know almost nothing about. I do know she was in a cool 1987 21 Jump Street episode in which she played a high school girl who asks undercover cop Tom Hansen, played by Johnny Depp, to kill her father. I also know that her big claim to fame was in the TV series Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks only lasts like 30 episodes in the 1991 season. My favorite of those episodes was, I never watched that show because David Lynch just isn't my jam, guys. But the show was huge. I mean, it really was. It was huge, beyond huge, for like 5 minutes. And then Sherilyn Fenn has basically been B-list ever since. So, yeah. We'll get into Boof soon. But there's something in Sherilyn's resume that I need to discuss first, which is 1994's Boxing Helena. Holy moly, this movie is batshit crazy. Here's a synopsis. This is, I wrote this down off the internet because I've seen the movie. A surgeon becomes obsessed with a seductive woman he once was in an affair with, refusing to accept that she has moved on. He amputates her limbs and holds her captive in his mansion. Yep. He cuts off her arms and legs, folks, and he puts her in a box. It's basically Generation X's Human Centipede. Like, that's how nutty it is. And check this out. Kim Basinger was supposed to be the lead, but she pulled out. She was then successfully sued for $9 million for breaching a verbal contract, and she had to declare bankruptcy. So imagine that. She lost $9 million because of this pile of shit movie. That sucks, Kim Basinger. What the fuck? Oh yeah, this is supposed to be about Boof. Okay. So no, Sherilyn Fenn would make a horrible Boof. The only thing that she brings to the table is the dark hair, case closed. But wait, what if Boof's limbs were amputated? Things just got a little interesting. I need to mold this over. I need to chew on this for a second. Boof in a box with no limbs. Does it work? No, it doesn't. But somewhere out there in another universe, I feel like in a parallel universe, there's a version of that. All right, so we're done with Sherilyn Fenn. Our next brunette is Rita Wilson, born in 1956. She's most famous for being married to Tom Hanks. No offense, but that's what the truth of it, right? I don't want to be dismissive of her career, but I can't think of any role she's known for. She's done tons of work, right? But nothing that made her a name beyond being married to Tom Hanks. Rita started working in TV while still in her teens. She appeared in an episode of The Brady Bunch, for Christ's sakes. Jesus, she's been working a long time. Not to mention she had Lou Grant, Chips, Hawaii Five-O, Bosom Buddies with her future husband, right? She and Tom started dating 4 years later, though, when they started together in 1984's Volunteers. Since then, she's recorded albums, she's produced film and television, she raised money for charities, she's worked as a social activist, but really she's just Tom Hanks' wife. That was a joke. Okay. The only project of hers that really jumps out at me is 1996's That Thing You Do. It was actually written and directed by Tom Hanks. By the way, go see that movie. Such a good fucking movie. It tells the story of a one-hit wonder band in the mid-1960s coming out of Erie, Pennsylvania. It's amazing. And again, I recommend you stop what you're doing and go watch it right away. But Rita had a small role in that as a cocktail waitress. And like the rest of the cast, she crushes it, man. She did a great job. At this point, I'm just vamping because I don't really have too many other thoughts on Rita Wilson as Boof. She just, quite frankly, seems too mature for the role. That's all I have to say about that, to quote her husband in Forrest Gump. I like making it about Tom Hanks. Next brunette, Terry Hatcher, folks. She was born in 1964. You know her from Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, Desperate Housewives. Terry Hatcher started her film and TV career with 19 episodes as a Love Boat mermaid on The Love Boat. I was intrigued. It's not as interesting as it sounds, though. I found out. The Love Boat mermaids were a dance troupe that they brought in during the penultimate season of The Love Boat. It was basically an effort to revamp the show. Sadly, it didn't work, and everyone on The Love Boat was killed in an explosion. I made that last part up, but the show did get canceled. Now, I must not be too earnest because, like Rita Wilson, I don't know much about Terry Hatcher either. I mean, I don't know. Although working steadily since 85, she didn't hit it big until 1993's Lois and Clark, which I never watched. But I'll tell you what I did watch in 1993. I watched Terry in her infamous Seinfeld episode where she told the world they're real and they're spectacular. So I'm familiar with that aspect of her work. That's classic stuff. Lois and Clark ended in 97, but Terry struck gold again in 2004 with Desperate Housewives, which I watched never. Nothing against Terry, Felicity Nicolette, or Marsha and Eva, but HBO and FX had long since turned me off of fucking network dramas, so I was watching The Shield and The Sopranos at that point. So let's investigate Terry's Boof worthiness. Her Love Boat dancing didn't start until 85, so she would have been a complete unknown in 84, which makes it unlikely that she would have even been called in to read for the part. Also, have you seen young Terry Hatcher? She's lights out. She's way too sexy for Boof. She's 100% Pamela. Looking at pictures of young Terry Hatcher, my first instinct was to cast her as Pamela because she looks like she would eat Michael J. Fox right up. But here's the rub. That part is so unlikable that I think it would have affected her later roles. Pamela was the first ever role for actress Lori Griffin, and her career crashed and burned after that. This likely would have been the first role for Terry. Had she been Pamela, would she have crashed and burned too? I mean, if so, who would have played Lois and Clark? Oh, shit. Do I now need to like write a chapter trying to recast Lois? No, I need to stop playing God and just walk away. This is too much responsibility for a podcaster. Too much. Now I'm fucking up Lois and Clark. So I'm going to go watch The Love Boat and relax my brain here. Okay, little side note. Watch 1989's The Big Picture. It's a great satire from director Christopher Guest. It's about a first-time screenwriter played by Kevin Bacon and his experiences in Hollywood. Martin Short is not credited in the movie, but trust me, he's in it for about 7 minutes and it might be some of his best work. Also, Terry Hatcher's actress character will prove to you beyond a shadow of doubt that she can ever play Boof because she's fucking lights out in that movie. So sorry, Terry Hatcher, we're moving on. Our next brunette, Diane Lane. Diane Lane, born in 1965. You know her from The Outsiders, Unfaithful. Diane Lane was a child actress and she did not fuck around when it came to her career. Unlike many up-and-comers, she did not pay her dues with bit parts and TV guest spots. Nope, she was a leading lady right from the jump. Her first credit is the lead in a 1979 movie called A Little Romance, and it was co-starring Sir Laurence Olivier, and it was also directed by George Roy Hill. Like many actors whose careers span decades, Diane's had some ups and downs. Her early career peaked in in the mid-80s with films like The Outsiders, Rumblefish, Streets of Fire. After the big name epic bomb that was The Cotton Club in 1984, Diane's career would hit its first lull. But by 1988, she's done, right? She's doing straight-to-video crap with Christopher Lambert. The 90s, though, would be a resurgence for her with some big flicks like Wild Bill, Jack, Murder at 1600. Her career would reach its zenith, I think, in the early 2000s with things like The Perfect Storm, Hardball, and then her Oscar-nominated performance in 2002's Unfaithful. Here's the thing, though. Whether or not Diane Lane could fill Boof's shoes is a moot point because she wouldn't have even entertained that notion of being in Teen Wolf. While they were casting Teen Wolf, she was starring in a Francis Ford Coppola movie opposite Richard Gere, right? So do you pick up the phone when Teen Wolf people call you and when you're working with Francis Ford Coppola and Richard Gere? Working with Michael J. Fox and director Rod Daniel would have been slumming it for her. So no offense, fellas. But we're going to make it about me for a minute. So I remember my family's first VCR. It was a Betamax. And if you recall, there were two types of VCRs you could buy early on, VHS and Betamax. One of them made it, one of them didn't. Guess which one we fucking bought. So we bought a Betamax and the remote control was attached by a wire. The first movie we ever rented was 1984 Streets of Fire starring Diane Lane. It was a self-described rock and roll fable, again, with Diane Lane. Michael Perret was in it from Eddie and the Cruisers. Rick Moranis was in it, amongst a bunch of other people. I think Willem Dafoe, but who knows. I remember the excitement of taking it out of the box, setting up this new technology, and then like anxiously awaiting my parents returning from the video store so we could watch our first movie. I mean, I had visions like E.T. or Conan the Barbarian, maybe Return of the Jedi. Nope. My 7-year-old ass was stuck watching this pile of shit. On Betamax, no less, by the way. So what the fuck? Make better choices, parents. So the winner of the Their Brunettes Award is... You know what? We're doing it again. No winners here. None of them can make a good Boof. None of them. So there are no winners. We're moving on. Now, before we head to our final category, I thought I would list for you some actresses that met the parameters, but were not even remotely right for the role of Boof, meaning they were born between 55 and 65, and they were working actors as of 1984, but they weren't even worth researching. Here they go. Sharon Stone, Rebecca De Mornay, Laurie Singer. Laurie Singer, if you don't know the name, she was Kevin Bacon's girlfriend in Footloose. Melanie Griffith, Linda Fiorentino, Marcia Warfield, Vivica A. Fox, Linda Hamilton, that's Sarah Connor, man. You can't have Sarah Connor. Teresa Russell, great Teresa Russell movie. Go rent Straight Time. It's from like the late 70s, I think. Her and Dustin Hoffman, Dustin Hoffman just gets out of prison and his parole officer's fucking with him. Great movie. Gary Busey's actually really good in it. Speaking of Gary Busey, I think I mentioned him earlier. So go watch Teresa Russell in Straight Time. Go watch it right now. Virginia Madsen and Cherry Curry. So those are actresses that met the parameters, but I didn't feel like researching because they clearly were the wrong fit. So now, without further ado, I present to you our final category. And this category is called Seemingly Perfect. Our final group of actors are the first women who came to mind when I realized I was going to embark on a journey to find the perfect Boof. Sadly, some of my initial top picks did not meet the parameters of being born between 55 and 65 while also being a working actor in 1985. My top draft pick was actually Sandra Bullock. I got so excited when I thought of a young Sandy Bullock palling around Nebraska with Scott and getting that final kiss at the end. She would have been perfect. But Sandra Bullock didn't appear in film or television until 1987. I was heartbroken. Another first rounder for me was Maura Tierney. So like Sandra Bullock, Maura would have been a fantastic boof. Also like Sandra Bullock, Maura did not start working until 1987. So I was dejected, demoralized. I almost gave up. I almost said the hell with it. Why should the weight of the Teen Wolf legacy rest on my shoulders? I'm just a guy, I'm just a fan of Czech, but I'm a guy with power. And with great power comes great responsibility. So I picked myself up, dusted myself off, and got to work. The first order of business was to stretch beyond my initial instincts. This search was going to require research. I would need to start with over 400 actresses. I would apply parameters. I would narrow the list down to 100, and I would corral them into categories and make them fight to the death until I discovered the undisputed perfect quintessential boof. This, my friends, is the final category, the calm before the storm that I like to call life and death, or just the winner's bracket, whichever is more palatable for you. There are no predetermined perfect matches for the coveted role of boof. Our final group of ladies will have to compete, just like all the others. I'm going to quote Kyle Reese from The Terminator. The future is not set. There is no fate, but what we make for ourselves. And yes, I do take myself very seriously. Let's take a look at our first seemingly perfect candidate, Lori Loughlin. Born in 1964, you know her as Aunt Becky on Full House. Full disclosure, over the years, I've heard a few podcasts discuss recasting Susan Ercidi as boof. They often land on one of two names, Sandra Bullock or Lori Loughlin. It's hard to argue with Lori Loughlin. She's super cute, very likable, perky, and she's not a cool girl. I get it. There's definitely boof potential. Her resume works too. By 1984, she's a soap opera veteran with over 500 episodes under her belt. Her three 1985 projects are forgettable, which tells me that Teen Wolf would have likely been very attractive to her. Let's discuss her legacy. She hit big in 1988 when she joined the cast of Full House during season two. She would go on to appear in 152 episodes of that show, and that show has proven to have some serious staying power. I mean, it's always streaming, it's all over my social media reels, and Netflix even made the damn follow-up series Fuller House. Uncle Becky's here to stay. But what about that whole college scandal? She paid tons of cash so her dopey daughter could get into USC on a crew scholarship, which is a sport the kid never even participated in. Does that hurt the legacy of Teen Wolf if Lori were boof? Does it? Nah, probably not. But don't listen to me, though. I still watch The Cosby Show. So clearly I'm desensitized to people doing awful shit. Now, the only thing that works against Lori is that it's hard to imagine Scott not liking her. I mean, hell, Uncle Jesse was smitten with her the second he saw her, and I can only assume that that dude had plenty of ladies by then, right? But then again, Jesse was probably used to skanks, and Becky was a nice change of pace, given that she probably didn't have any STDs, so maybe that was the allure. My final answer is yes. Yes, Lori Loughlin holds up. She's a solid choice for boof, and she just might be the one to beat. She might be the front runner. It's hard to argue. My next seemingly perfect candidate, Crystal Bernard. Born in 1961, you know her from It's a Living and Wings. One of the first names that popped into my head when I started this project was Crystal Bernard. The next thing that popped in my head was the question, what the hell happened to Crystal Bernard? It's been years since I've seen her anything, so I assume she was like languishing somewhere over in Lifetime movies or something. Nope, she straight up quit acting in 2008. She's retired. She left in 2008, good for her. Crystal Bernard burst onto the scene with immediate success in 1982. I'm assuming she has a solid relationship with Gary Marshall because in 82, she appeared in both his movie, Young Doctors in Love, and his classic TV show, Happy Days. She played Howard Cunningham's niece in seasons 9 and 10. I think it's also safe to assume that she has a solid relationship with Michael J. Fox because she worked with him in the TV movie High School USA. Crystal later found herself joining the cast of the syndicated sitcom It's a Living, but most people likely recognize her as Helen in Wings, which ran from 1990 to 1997. Crystal also had a music career in the 90s, releasing two albums, and she even recorded a single with Peter Cetera, which I thought was pretty cool. And then she ghosted. She walked. 2008, she's gone. So, petite and beautiful. She also had a knack for playing smart, earnest characters. Crystal would do well at standing her ground with Scott, right? And not feeding into his newfound ego when the wolf becomes the school's newest hero. Her Southern roots, though, always tend to come out, so we need to do a rewrite, maybe, and make Spoot the Southerner, which is easy enough. I think she makes a great boof, and that's why she's in this category. Our next seemingly perfect candidate, Marissa Tomei. Born in 1964. You know her from my cousin, Vinny the Wrestler. She's Aunt May in the Marvel Universe. I was very close to putting Marissa in the no wolf, no part category because I would love to see her My Cousin Vinny character, Mona Lisa Vito, roaming the halls of Scott's school, bitching about her biological clock and reminding everyone that the pause attraction was not available in the 1964 Buick Skylark. It would have been fucking awesome. But Marissa would have also qualified for the In the Oscar Goes To category, given that she's a three-time Oscar nominee and winner for Best Actress in a Supporting Role for her work, again, in My Cousin Vinny. In the end, I chose to place Marissa in this category because she just might be a perfect boof. Marissa made her debut in 1984 with an uncredited turn in The Toxic Avenger, and she also did a small role in The Flamingo Kid and then 18 episodes of As In the World Turns. She was 18 episodes in As the World Turns. Her first big break would be season one of The Cosby Show spinoff, A Different World. Career-wise, Teen Wolf would have been perfect for her. She was an unknown with some experience who would be more than happy to take on a supporting role in a teen comedy alongside Michael J. Fox. 20-year-old Marissa, like 60-year-old Marissa, is beautiful but quirky, fun, full of charisma. It's not shocking that only a few years later, still basically unknown, that she would star in My Cousin Vinny and steal every scene from the legendary Joe Pesci. Like Crystal Bernard, Marissa would likely require a rewrite to incorporate her Brooklyn roots, since her New York City demeanor seemingly leaks through her pores. Am I sure that she would make a good boof? Yeah. And as Mona Lisa would say, I'm positive. Another nice little callback. Okay. Next category, Meg Ryan. Now, bear with me on this one. I know people are like, what? Nope, stay with me. Born 1961, of course, you know her from When Harry Met Sally, Sleepless in Seattle, You've Got Mail. I know what you're thinking. At first glance, this is an odd pick. Meg Ryan was the rom-com queen in the 90s. She was America's sweetheart. This doesn't exactly scream boof. But I beg of you, pick up your phone and take a look at her IMDb. Her early 80s were very similar to many of our other boof candidates. Through 1985, her biggest roles were a small part in Amityville 3D, with Lori Loughlin, by the way, 32 episodes of As the World Turns, and two guest spots on Charles in Charge. Her big break came as Goose's wife in 1986's Top Gun, and as you may recall, she wasn't anywhere near being America's sweetheart yet. In fact, she was fucking strange. Cute and quirky, yes, but strange, right? We didn't start to get a glimpse of the Meg Ryan we came to know and love until 1988's DOA, The Presidio, and then, of course, she became full-on Meg Ryan in 1989 when she was faking her orgasm alongside Billy Crystal. So the 1984 version of Meg was cute and quirky with only 5 credits on her resume. I think this works. Now, later, when Meg Ryan became Meg Ryan, she made a career of being the girl that struggled to get the boy. Hell, she's beautiful and still had a hard time locking down Billy fucking Crystal. So we as an audience often found ourselves rooting for her. Wouldn't it be great if Boof were being played by an actress we could root for? Did anyone really give a shit if Susan Orsini got her man in the end? No. Which is why I'm writing this never-ending chapter in the fucking first place. Now also, imagine what her later success would do for Teen Wolf. Could she have elevated Teen Wolf to share the same place in history as films like When Harry Met Sally or Sleepless in Seattle? And even if she couldn't quite get the film to that level, would Teen Wolf at least be in the conversation? Maybe. Just maybe. And maybe just might be good enough. Bum, bum, bum. Next candidate in the seemingly perfect category, Kira Sedgwick. Born in 1965, you know her from Born on the 4th of July, Phenomenon, that show, The Closer. Kira Sedgwick married fellow actor Kevin Bacon in 1988. In 2012, they discovered that they're distant cousins. Hasn't seemed to affect their marriage, so if it's cool with them, it's cool with me, I suppose. Like most of our candidates, Kira was still an up-and-comer in 1984, and most of her experience was via a soap opera. Again, she was on Another World. Interestingly, in 1985, she was the lead in an ABC after-school special. It was titled Cindy Eller, A Modern Fairy Tale. Get it? Cindy Eller, like Cinderella? I'd love to meet the asshole that came up with that, by the way. This little gem also featured, by the way, fellow booth candidate Jennifer Grey. So Jennifer Grey, too, was in Cindy Yeller. Now, Keira didn't appear on my radar until 1989's Born on the 4th of July, where she played Tom Cruise's love interest, like his childhood love. Later, she would become the object of my teen angst affection in the Cameron Crowe 1992 classic Singles. Now, Singles is like the definitive Generation X movie. So if you're Generation X, you probably know Singles. If you're not Generation X, you're probably like, what the fuck is Singles? That's the definitive movie, I think, for my generation personally. That movie, the soundtrack featured Pearl Jam, they were also in the movie, by the way. Mother Love Bone, Alice in Chains, Paul Westerberg, Screaming Cheese, a bunch of other people. I had this cassette tape. I must have listened to it 1,000 fucking times. I was so young and cool back then. Man, I was young and cool and young. Just so cool. Anyway, let's move on. Does Keira Sedgwick a good boof make? Let's take a look. Good look, check. She's beautiful. Why not being traditionally beautiful? She would look good alongside Michael J. Fox and opposite Pamela, I think. Acting chops, check. She's great at playing strong, smart, independent women. But would she have done it? Check. Her only credits in 1984, there were 16 episodes of Another World. Does she improve the legacy? Check, check. Aside from marrying her cousin, Keira would bring honor to the role in Legacy of Teen Wolf. So this continues to be a tight race. I'm all in on Keira Sedgwick. Next candidate, and it's our final candidate. The last lady we're going to talk about before we go into the finals bracket. Some people call her Sarah. Some people call her SJP. But she's formerly known as Sarah Jessica Parker. 1965 is when she was born. You know her from a ton of things, probably most famous from Sex and the City. SJP has always had a very unique look and style about her. It's interesting to see how she started her career as like the nerdy, awkward girl in Square Pegs, and then later graduated to sex kid roles like Honeymoon in Vegas and, of course, Sex and the City. To me, the definitive boof is what SJP did as Rusty in Footloose. Rusty was the, if you don't remember, the tiny, cute little Spitfire friend who dated Chris Penn's character, Wilbur. I would love to pluck her out of 1983's Footloose and drop her into 1985's Teen Wolf as boof. Everybody wins. It would have resulted in one hell of a 1985 for Sarah Jessica Parker because she would have followed Teen Wolf with another 80s classic, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, with fellow boofer Helen Hunt, who I don't like. Then Teen Wolf would always be kept top of mind as SJP graduated into adult roles like L.A. Story, Hocus Pocus, The First Wives Clubs, and ultimately Sex and the City. Sarah Jessica Parker arguably is bordering on icon status. I mean, she's a legend of film, legend of television, legend of fashion. What's interesting about that, though, is that most of her movies haven't done well. In fact, most are forgettable, but she's like Teflon. And nothing can bring her down. So her playing boof is like a no harm, no foul situation for her. It can't hurt her anyway, but it would absolutely improve and elevate the movie. So maybe boof needs an icon to step into those Payless shoes, man. So I'm all in on Sarah Jessica Parker too. So the winner of the seemingly perfect category. This was a tough one. I ended up going with a tie. Lori Loughlin and Crystal Bernard. So congratulations, Lori and Crystal. We're going to see you now in the finalist tournament. So let's recap what we did today before we go to the finalist tournament. We did the And the Oscar Goes To, won by Julianne Moore. The St. Elmo's Pretty Pink Breakfast Club, won by Ally Sheedy. The They're Brunettes, we had no winners there. And then the Seemingly Perfect was a tie, Lori Loughlin and Crystal Bernard. So we've got 16 finalists. I will name them for you now. Melissa Gilbert, Daphne Zuniga, Tracy Nelson, Holly Robinson, Pete, Frances McDormand, Phoebe Cates, Heather Langenkamp, Elizabeth Shue, Jennifer Grey, Tracy Pollan, Marley Matlin, Courtney Cox, Julianne Moore, Ally Sheedy, Lori Loughlin, Crystal Bernard. So we're going to do this bracket style. So I wish you could see it. You can follow along if you have a piece of paper. Our first conference here, Melissa Gilbert versus Daphne Zuniga. I'm going with Daphne Zuniga. Melissa Gilbert is out. Daphne Zuniga beats her. Next up is Tracy Nelson versus Holly Robinson Pete. I'm giving that to Holly Robinson Pete. Then we got Frances McDormand versus Phoebe Cates. It's got to be Phoebe Cates. Heather Langenkamp versus Elizabeth Shue. It's got to be Heather Langenkamp. I think Elizabeth Shue is a little too pretty, a little too successful at that point. Now, going into the first round of the other conference, Jennifer Grey versus Tracy Pollan. How do you say no to Tracy Pollan? That's his wife, proven chemistry, great look. Marley Matlin versus Courtney Cox. Upset. Marley Matlin takes her out. I'm sorry, Courtney Cox Dupree. Marley Matlin's in the role. I like the idea of a death booth. Julianne Moore versus Ally Sheedy. Another upset. I'm going Ally Sheedy. Julianne Moore, I don't know. Ally Sheedy, perfect, perfect. Timing, perfect. Look, perfect. Career for the 80s. We're going Ally Sheedy. And then finally, Lori Loughlin, Crystal Bernard. All those podcasters always lead with Sandra Bullock and Lori Loughlin. And I'm giving the upset right now to Crystal Bernard. Lori Loughlin is bounced in the first round. She's just too pretty, too perfect. Too look, go back and look at her. Is there any boy in high school who would not be in love with Lori Loughlin? So how can we say this little 5'5" shitbag is not in love with her? He's got to be. So it's Crystal Bernard. So going back to the first conference, second round, Daphne Zuniga versus Holly Robinson Pete. It's a tough one. I like Holly Robinson Pete. I do. But Daphne Zuniga, who came out of the similar vibe but better category, I think she edges her out. I'm going Daphne Zuniga. Then I got Phoebe Cates versus Heather Langenkamp. It's got to be Heather Langenkamp. And I love Phoebe Cates. Phoebe Cates is far too hot for the role. So in that conference comes down to Daphne Zuniga versus Heather Langenkamp. Going back to this conference number two, we have Tracy Pollan versus Marley Matlin. I thought Marley Matlin was going to go very far into this tournament. But once she has to face Tracy Pollan, how do you say no to Tracy Pollan? Tracy Pollan advances. Then I've got Ally Sheedy versus Crystal Bernard. Both great, both cute. I just think there's something more tiny, more friend quality to Crystal Bernard. I'm going Crystal Bernard. Ally Sheedy is gone. So back to my first category. Two candidates left, Daphne Zuniga, Heather Langenkamp. They're both great, but I went Daphne Zuniga. She's going to the championship game. Daphne Zuniga. Back to the other conference, Tracy Pollan versus Crystal Bernard. And although Tracy Pollan is Michael J. Fox's real wife, she is no Crystal Bernard. Crystal Bernard is going to the championship game. It is now down to this is it. This is the championship. This is the Super Bowl of Boof. Daphne Zuniga versus Crystal Bernard. Both great. Daphne Zuniga would go on to be in Spaceballs, and she gets more fame in Melrose Place. She came out of the similar vibe, but better category, right? Crystal Bernard, she would go on to It's a Living, and of course, Wings. She came out of the Seemingly Perfect Award, and that's the problem. Or the Seemingly Perfect category. That's the problem, though. Crystal Bernard is a little too perfect. Like a lot of them, like Lori Loughlin, like some of these women. How does Michael J. Fox hang out with that girl and not have a crush? I don't get it. So no offense to Crystal Bernard. It goes to our perfect booth, Daphne Zuniga. So all of this work, 400 actresses, 4 podcasts, 6 weeks or so of me writing. And what I landed on was the definitive booth. Perfect in look, perfect in resume, perfect in timing, perfect in legacy. Daphne Zuniga is our booth. So I hope you've enjoyed this journey with me, this 4-part journey in searching for booth. And in case you didn't catch it, the real joke is I was using this just as a catalyst to talk about a bunch of 80s stuff and 80s actresses. I'm not that into Teen Wolf. That would make me fucking psychotic. But I do like Teen Wolf, and I hope you enjoyed this. So if you like the podcast, do me a favor, rate and review it. That always helps. Hit me up on Facebook. I'm Real Fanacek. Lots of you write to me. I'm still sending all kinds of stickers all the time. I just ordered my 3rd batch of stickers. That's how many stickers they send out. I'm also on Twitter. I don't do much with it, but I'm Real Fan. I'm a Fanacek Podcast on Twitter. At Fanacek Podcast. Most of my stuff is Facebook. Yo, hit me up though. Email me, fanacekpodcast@gmail.com. I got a YouTube channel. Go see some of my interviews. I've interviewed some celebrities. It's on, look up Fanacek on YouTube. And I really genuinely appreciate you listening and following me on this journey. I know it seemed a little bit nuts, but it's been a lot of fun. So do me a favor. Do me a favor. You know what I'm going to ask you to do. I need you to sit tight and stay tuned until the next exciting episode of Fanacek.